A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Kia ora, welcome to the Kiwi Birth Tales podcast and thanks for tuning in this week. I'm your host Jordan, I'm a mum of one, soon to be two boys and a lover of all things birth and a very passionate storyteller. The goal of Kiwi Birth Tales is to empower, inform, educate and connect families from New Zealand and all over the world, talking about the things that are so often kept to ourselves or shared with only our nearest and dearest because of this taboo that seems to surround sharing stories about birth. All stories deserve to be heard, no story more important than the other, and with this podcast you'll get a variety without bias. The podcast is not intended for medical advice. I'm not an advocate for any particular mode of birth or birth care, and this platform is simply here to share these beautiful, empowering Kiwi birth tales with you all. So I hope you enjoy. In this week's episode, I speak with Lisa, and Lisa joins us on the podcast to take us through her four pregnancy and birth stories. Lisa is full of energy, and you will not be bored throughout this episode because, yeah, she's got heaps of just information and personal experiences to share. So Lisa's first birth was in Sydney. So she talks us through what that experience was like and then also coming home back to New Zealand and having her next three births here. She has had four vaginal births and they've all been quite different. So she talks through all of the different birth stories and also juggling each child as they sort of joined their family and what that new addition was like, and then rounds us out with her fourth birth, which was actually very close to an earthquake that we had in New Zealand. So she talks about what that experience was like postpartum, and yeah, it's a jam-packed episode and I really loved speaking with Lisa about all of her experiences, so I hope that you enjoy it too. I would absolutely love to hear your feedback. If you want to tag me in your story, where you're listening, what you're doing, send me a message or send me an email. I love to hear from you. But otherwise, I hope that you enjoy the episode and yeah, let's jump in. Hi, Lisa. Thanks so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Hi, Jordan. Thank you so much for having me.
No worries. Would you like to tell our listeners a little bit about you and who is in your family?
Sure. So I have four children and a husband, and all my children are boys and they are a bit older now. So my baby, he is nearly five. He'll be five in November. And then I have a 7-year-old, a 9-year-old and a 10-year-old.
Yeah. Awesome. Busy household with four boys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. And do you want to talk us through what the journey was like to pregnancy for you guys the first time around?
Yeah, okay. So we were living in London, but then we moved back to Sydney at the time. And my husband's father had two young boys. He had remarried. And when I met Dan, like, obviously, I just thought, I just want to have babies with him. And so we were together for like only about 2 years. And then we moved back to Sydney and we were around these two little boys. And I remember one night just going to Dan when we got home, like, oh, I just want to have a baby now. And we talked about it, obviously, and I knew he wanted to have babies as well. So we just thought we'd just try once. Yeah. And we were so lucky, and it was so scary because we weren't prepared. We didn't have anything. And I remember that night, like putting my legs in the air because I read that's what you do.
Yeah.
And I did that, and then lo and behold, we were pregnant.
Yeah. Wow.
Crazy.
Amazing. And how did you feel when you found out that you were pregnant? Did you have many of the like normal pregnancy symptoms, or yeah, what was that like?
I was absolutely freaked out when I found out because we just did not. I don't know about you, but there's been many times throughout my early years that I've have not been pregnant thinking that maybe been pregnant, you know, like probably stuff that, you know, too much information, but so I was absolutely so shocked. But yeah, no, I had really sore boobs. That was my first thing I noticed with the first pregnancy. that like unusually painfully sore that I never really had. I didn't have any hormone, you know, I never got sore boobs around my period or anything. So yeah, I just had really sore boobs. I remember that quite clearly.
Yeah. And what about the rest of your first trimester? Did you have many other symptoms that sort of popped up after that?
Yeah, I was pretty nauseous. I had to walk past a fish market every day. I was living in Sydney and had to walk through this mall that had a fish market in it. And I just remember wanting to like vomit every time I walked past. I had to put my jersey over my nose and I would just try and hustle through the crowds as fast as I could to get out to the other side because I just felt terrible. I was off coffee and that was a bit gutting. So I remember loving my morning coffee and I just couldn't stomach it. And apart from just the usual fatigue, I felt quite faint on the trains in Sydney, and I did faint one time in the early trimester. And I was luckily enough with one of my mates that I worked with and he kind of rescued me. But after the first trimester, I was quite lucky and I didn't feel nauseous anymore. So, you know, it was more so just in the first trimester. I needed to pee the whole way through though. You know how some people just pee in at the beginning and at the end? I always needed to pee,
And what about your care? So I know that you were in Sydney for this pregnancy. So did you go with a midwife or a private obstetrician, or what did that look like for you?
Yeah, that was quite crazy. I remember as soon as I got those two lines on the pregnancy test, just thinking, oh my gosh, what do I do now? You know, and you like, I didn't really know anybody. None of my friends were in Sydney, really. It was just, I think my sisters had they had moved over. But, you know, they'd had never they weren't mothers or anything. And so I didn't know what to do. And I remember going to the nearest like doctor and booked an appointment, and she just looked at me like I was like, you know, why are you even coming here? You're only, you know, 5 weeks pregnant kind of thing. She said, you just need to find a midwife. So then I looked around and found a midwife, and I just, you couldn't actually, you couldn't get a midwife. You couldn't get a set midwife. So I would go to this, midwifery like center, and each time I would go for the appointment, it would be a new midwife. And so I didn't actually have one set midwife. It was quite weird, so I didn't really get a bond with anyone or anything like that. And I'm a big bond.
Was like a group practice or something like that.
Yeah, it was a group practice, and I would go every, you know, I think at the start they say come at 9 weeks and then you do the scan and then you come back and then you come every 4 weeks. I think I did that, but I never knew what midwife I was going to get. And I remember thinking this was different to anything I'd heard from back home, you know?
Yeah. And did you do the sort of standard testing in that pregnancy as well? So like the normal scans and blood tests and everything like that that's offered to you?
Yeah, so I did the normal scans and testing, and then at the 20-week scan we got told that it was possible that the baby had a two vessel cord. So that meant we needed to go into this other room and talk to another doctor, and I was obviously freaking out. And at that point I was like, I wanted to know the gender, because I thought if I knew the gender it might help me bond with the baby, and and then we found out it was a boy, and that he could possibly had a two vessel cord, which meant in a normal pregnancy or whatever, in a routine pregnancy, you should have three vessels, two arteries and one vein. And he only had one apparently he only had one artery and one vein. And so that could lead to chromosomal abnormality. Right. So I had to have a scan every month from then. And that was quite stressful. I remember feeling quite stressed about that.
And so did they know that, you know, every month they were looking for something specific, or was it like a wait and see, or what was that like?
Yeah, it was just like I feel like I kind of blocked that out of my brain a little bit, but I think it was, I'd have a scan and it was always fine. He's growing fine, he might be a bit small. I always got told that the main thing was that he'd probably be a bit small, maybe. And obviously I Googled everything, and I remember crying and stressing because I'm such a stressor and freaking out. And people telling me that these days, you know, they find so much on scans and they tell you so much more than they used to. Like, mum never had scans really with us. And, you know, so there was always the reassurance from the older generation that it will probably be fine. It'll be nothing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I tried to just get by.
Yeah. And did you do any like antenatal classes or any type of birth education going into your labour and birth?
That was the other thing that was so different to New Zealand. So we enrolled in an antenatal class, but every time we went, there were new people at the class. So you never had a group of the same people.
Okay.
And so because we had moved to Sydney from London, I didn't actually have, well, all of my friends weren't having babies. So we were kind of quite young, I think, maybe back then. Like, my husband was 25 when Rico was born, and I was 27. And my friends hadn't had babies by then, and we didn't really have any friends with babies. So I felt it was quite weird because we didn't really connect with anyone that was in our position. So, and then after the baby was born, you didn't have a set antenatal group. You'd just go again to this room where there'd be whoever would turn up on the day would come and would share stories.
Uh-huh.
It was different to what I'd heard, because I kept hearing from people saying, oh, make sure you get a good antenatal group and you'll probably find really good friends from that. And that was not the case. We didn't really have the opportunity. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And did you have much of like a birth plan or thoughts on how you wanted your birth to go?
No. So I didn't really. All I'd heard about birth was that it was just petrifyingly terrible.
Yeah.
And I just didn't really know what the heck. I honestly look back now and I think I was so uneducated in it, but it actually was just so, my whole mindset was just not really in the game. So
yeah. And so were you doing anything like to try and prepare for labor or anything to try and get your labor to start spontaneously?
Yeah, I wanted to get the baby out by like 36 weeks.
Yeah.
I was just like doing everything I could to get him out. I just wanted it to hurry up and just be done with. And so the fear of labour was lesser than the fact that I wanted him out. You know, I didn't care. I just wanted him out. So it's so great when you get to that point, hey, because you just think, right, I'm ready. Like, just get you're probably feeling a bit like that. And I remember going, I had a friend come and visit and we went for this little walk, and I sort of did a bit of a jog, which is ridiculous. Not long. I mean, I jogged like 10 metres. It was nothing. But that night, the labour started. So I was actually really early. But 36 weeks, 5 days, went to bed and felt a bit uncomfortable and stood up and went to the lounge. We were living in a little apartment in Sydney, and I sort of just sort of like kind of sat on a chair, almost like manifesting, this is it, this is it. And I didn't really feel any pains or anything. I just felt a bit funny. And then like I walked back to bed and my waters broke, and it was weird. And I was like, oh my gosh. And I was 36 weeks, 5 days. And everyone had been telling me that you go over, because mum went over with my brother, the first child by 14 days. So she was just, and they were in Wellington. And so they were not ready to come to, they were going to come to Sydney. And so, it makes me laugh too, because my waters broke and I just thought, right, we're on. But I wasn't on for a while. So we went into the hospital. You see, that's the other thing. Like, back here in New Zealand, like, if your waters broke and it's possibly your first birth, the midwife, you'd probably ring your midwife and the midwife would just say, just hold tight kind of thing.
Yeah.
But we just went straight into hospital because we had no number to call. We had nothing really. It was so weird.
Yeah, that is weird.
We just called the hospital and they said, come in and we'll just see, I think. And so I came in and they actually kept me in there because I was like, if I'd had the baby, he would have been deemed as prem. So they wanted to kind of keep an eye on me and just keep an eye on the baby. So nothing was happening for like the whole night. So I remember we were kind of rushing to the hospital. It makes me lol because we got in the car and we were like stressing and I was like, come on, I'm in labor. Like, I wasn't really in labor really. I was just the beginning stages, you know?
yeah.
Anyway, mum and dad managed to get a flight. So that night we went into the hospital. It was like 1 a.m. The next day, I remember walking around the block heaps of times, trying to bring the labour on. And then, so that was 36 weeks, 6 days.
Yeah.
And then that night, mum and dad arrived at about 6 p.m. And she walked into the hospital and she said she couldn't believe what she saw because she hadn't seen me for a while. The whole pregnancy, she sort of hadn't seen me. And she was just like, oh, my God, I looked. But I wasn't, you know, I was properly in labour by then. It was about 6 p.m.
Yeah.
But I was so stoked to see my parents arrive. And then it all sort of started happening around, you know, 7:30, I feel like. But we were in, because they had put me in, they didn't put me in a delivery suite at the start because I wasn't really in active labour or anything.
Yeah.
By the time they had to put me in a delivery suite, there was no room. So the whole of St. George's Hospital was fully booked or something. Ooh. So I had to be in the birthing suite. So it was where once you've had your baby, you go to a new level, you know, new floor. And I was in that floor. And I was actually sharing, there was, you often shared a, you know, you didn't get your own room. So I was sharing a room with a lady that was 23 weeks pregnant and they were trying to stop her labour. And I was in full labour and I just remember feeling like so out of sorts, like, where am I, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember there was chat between the midwives and it was just so, it was flustering me so much because they didn't have a room for me. And I remember one midwife who was a, because on one floor, if you were at the birthing suite, you'd get the midwives that would know how to deliver babies. But then this floor where we were, it was the midwives that just cared for the babies after birth and the mums after birth. And I remember her doing an internal and her saying, oh, gosh, you're quite far along. I might need to deliver this baby. I haven't delivered a baby in years. And I just remember, like, freaking out. Like, my whole brain was just, you know, I was trying. I just was so out of control with my mindset. Like, I couldn't. And I remember mum looking up at her and saying, you know, she actually said, this is like delivering birth in a third world country or something. Like, she just couldn't believe it. There was no room for me. And there was a lady that was, you know, giving me an internal and I'm in full labour saying she might need to deliver a baby and she hasn't delivered a baby. And, and then I was demanding to get an epidural and they were just like, well, we can't give you an epidural here because we're not in the right, you don't have a room yet.
Yeah.
And I just was losing it pretty much. And then they wheeled me around in a wheelchair to try and get me pethidine, I think, to put into my veins in my wrist. And that was the other thing. They couldn't find my vein. And I remember my husband, who's like pretty chilled, and I remember him just looking really stressed at this point, like, what the heck? Like, because they were just, it was just so chaotic.
Yeah.
And I just look back now and I think, you know, when you go into a birth, you want to be calm. Like, you want to try and be calm. Yeah. And that's your goal, is to try and you want kind of a calm environment. And the environment I was in was just so far from calm that it just makes me cringe so much. And there was a full moon, I remember that. And, like, I could hear the chat going on, like, oh, we're so busy. We haven't been this busy in so long. And anyway, they finally found me a room that was, I could go to, so I somehow got to the room and I was like, I need an epidural. And I remember they were saying that you're 9 centimeters, you can't have an epidural, it's too late. But I was just like, well, I have to. And so then they apparently administered a minor epidural.
Mm-hmm.
And that helped my mind a lot. I remember finally feeling like I could sort of regain a bit of control. And I was ready to push and I pushed within 20 minutes and my little man, my firstborn, was born.
Wow. Not too long of a pushing time.
No. And, but I remember, like, so many people in the room too. It was just so far from what I was expecting. The whole experience was just, like, so chaotic that, I don't know, but I also said to, like, after I realised that, you know, I've come to and I've given birth, I was asked to see the two vessel cord And it was a student midwife on at this point, and she couldn't find it. So I have no idea to this day, like, what that was about. So right. Yeah, it was pretty, it was quite a good birth, but it was so chaotic. And, you know, I only had 3 stitches. So that was quite amazing for my first birth. And I just remember thinking, like, I feel like my whole brain was just complete. Like, it was so hard on my poor mind as well as my body. It was really hard.
And he was all fine when he was born, like, you know, with the supposed 2-vessel cord, he was all good?
Yeah, he was totally fine. So he was he was 3 weeks early, and he was 6 pounds, oh, but pretty okay for being 3 weeks early. He actually is my most kind of chaotic child. It's real funny. It was difficult. I found it really difficult. He fed well. He latched well. He had quite bad reflux, and I didn't really realize that until I had, you know, my second baby, that I realized this is actually not okay, you know, not right. But he was a difficult baby. He was quite hard work. And again, I didn't really have any support, friends or anyone around me in Sydney. So I found that pretty testing. It was really hard.
And did you spend long in the hospital sort of straight after birth?
Yes, I remember. Well, no, not really. I remember staying there and feeling like I couldn't relax and I wanted to be with my man. Like, I just felt he calms me. And I remember wanting to stay there because I needed help with feeding. But then they were so busy, and they were so, I had to share a room, you know, and I couldn't sleep. I'm not a very good sleeper if I'm not in my own bed really anyway. And so I was there for 2 nights, and then I was just desperate to come home, and I just said, I need to go home. And I hadn't even mastered feeding at all, but I said to them, I remember thinking, I know I'll sort this out easier at home and being at home. And and so that, as soon as I got home, I felt immediately better and more comfortable. And you know, I just couldn't share a room. It was just so hard. And I just, and then, so going home was probably the best thing, really.
And how did you feel once you got home? Like, obviously your whole life has changed with your new baby, and you're a mum now. So what were those first few days and weeks like at home?
Oh, I think I cried a lot. Like, I remember, you know, when you have a baby and you're so lucky because you're going to feel this soon, but you feel like the whole world should stop. Like, you know, when you drive home and you're thinking like, hey, there's a new baby in here. Or you just think that, like, it's like the whole world should know that you've got this new baby. And I remember being so incredibly proud of him. And I mean, obviously, I just thought he was the cutest thing. He had a terrible cone head, though, because he'd been the first baby. I'm sure it must happen quite a bit, but he was, like, low down for so many weeks that his head was so cone-like. I remember that. And he was quite jaundiced, but he was beautiful. And I just remember finding it very overwhelming. And we had a lot of my husband's mates, because he's from Sydney, and a lot of his mates would rock over at any time, and I didn't know about having kind of rules for visiting, and they'd be here till 10 o'clock at night, and I'd be in my room and I'd be crying, and because they didn't understand, they didn't get it. And that was really hard. And then I did find all that pretty overwhelming. I had no really idea. I didn't know what to do. And so, and it's so funny because a lot of people would always say to me, oh, you'd be such a great mum, because I used to be a teacher. And I suddenly had this baby and I was like, oh my God, I've just, like, I have no idea what I'm doing. So it was very overwhelming. I definitely was not one of those mothers that were like first time and just been like, oh yeah, it's awesome, it's so great. Like, I found it really hard.
No, fair enough. And were your parents there for very long? Like, did you find that sort of support helpful, or what was that like initially?
I was so lucky. So they booked in an apartment and rented out an apartment about a 2-kilometer walk from my house. So for 6 weeks. So for the first 6 weeks, they did that for me. And that was just so amazing, because I could just, once I, after a couple of weeks, I, you know, I'd get him, get little man Rico dressed, and then we'd just go for a walk up to the apartment and I'd hang out there. And so that was so good. I don't know how I would do it if I, if they hadn't, you know, I, well, I would do it because you just do whatever, but that was such a wonderful support. And I always remember those few weeks so fondly. I do remember mum always saying to me, though, just feed him.
It's such a mum thing. Oh, my gosh, it is such a mum thing to tell people that.
It's real funny because now she just laughs because she's seen me do it again and again, and she knows, like, okay, I'm not going to say just feed him, because it actually made it so much worse. Like, his reflux was just so bad. The poor little piglet. I mean, he'd always want to feed. They always want to blooming feed. But I was just, he was just getting way too much and he couldn't cope. And yeah, so it was all about every time he cried, just feed him. But no, it was amazing to have my parents, and I will be forever grateful to have them for those first 6 weeks of his life. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Cool. And what about your, like, physical recovery from birth? How did you find healing from the stitches and just, I guess you've been through something massive with birth, right? So how did you feel physically after that?
I remember feeling like battered and bruised all over. After, you know, the first few days, you know, back sore, and you just actually, and at the time when you're in the labor, you just don't really think that that would happen. You don't really think you'd have those after effects, eh? You just think you'd have the baby and it would be fine. I remember just being like completely wiped out too, because I was so tired because it was such a long birth. So it wasn't a long excruciating birth for all that time, but I was not sleeping. You know, once your waters break, you just, I just couldn't relax, especially for your first time. So I was kind of like 2 days with no sleep, and then I couldn't get, you can't catch up. And I would try and catch up, but that was always, that was such a hard, that was so hard for me to try and know that there was going to be light at the end of the tunnel. And I remember, you know, my stitches were all good. I didn't have, in the apartment we were in, it didn't have a shower head that would latch on. You know how ideally you'd want like a hose and you'd hose your vagina. Yeah. But I just had a pump bottle, and we didn't have one of those hoses, detachable hoses. So I'd have a pump bottle and I'd squirt myself and wash myself. But that actually was all good. Pretty textbook healing, like nothing wrong. I just took it real easy. I didn't do anything really first 6 weeks. I just lay down and tried to recover.
Nice. And I guess if we jump forwards a little bit, so we obviously know that you've had a couple more babies since then, so do you want to take us through falling pregnant the second time and what that journey was like?
Okay, so we always had this plan that we wanted like four, and we wanted them all like close together. I don't know why we wanted, I mean, I am stoked that we've done it like this, but I really just wanted a bunch of boys really close together, and I actually am so lucky to get that. But with our second Louis, his name is, so we started trying. I remember I asked my husband this today. I said, how long did it take us to get pregnant with the boys? It was like first time every time, he said. I was like, well, no, it didn't. I think that, so with Rico, it was like that first time. And then the second one, I reckon I wanted to have about a year and a half gap.
Yeah.
And so when Rico turned one, I was pregnant. And so it took us, I remember it taking, like, we tried 1 month and it didn't happen. And then we tried the next month and it happened. And so we were so lucky. And I remember being pregnant at Rico's first birthday and telling people, and they were just like, oh my gosh, like, you know, the comments, like, why don't you just have at least 2.5 year gap? That's probably best. And all these comments, like, or why don't you a 3 year gap? And I'm like, no, I wanted to have a year and a half gap. And I'm really lucky that I get to have this, you know?
And how are you feeling? I guess, like, it's something else being pregnant the second time around, I reckon, when you're previously had a pregnancy when you've got no other children. So how are you feeling in that first trimester this time?
Do you know that I don't. I remember feeling sick, but I remember being so busy with Rico that it was so helpful. Yeah. So like the first time I was so fixated on it that I would be at work and I wasn't teaching at the time and I was working in front of a screen. And I remember just being so bored and so invested in Googling about pregnancy and what week I was up to and what my baby looked like. So this time round, it was a bit of a blessing in a way because I was sick. I was just nauseous and very tired, but he would have a good hour sleep or 2 hours in the day. You know, he was on one sleep. No, he was on two sleeps because he was only little. And I remember just always making sure I lay down when I could. And I made sure that he had his sleeps and I'd be home from him to have his sleep so I could rest. And so I started to get quite organized and efficient with that because I knew I had to. I do remember I went back teaching because we'd moved back to Wellington by then. And I remember I was doing a little bit of relief work and feeling really nauseous while I was teaching, but then I was busy. So it was kind of a bit better. I found the second time, like obviously harder because I remember him like waking up in the night still so much. And it's almost like they have sleep regressions when you're pregnant too. And you're just like, how am I? I know it happened every time for us. And so I remember freaking out, like, how am I going to do this? But that's when I kind of said to Dan, you know, maybe you should go to him now because I'm going to be having a newborn soon. So we kind of just worked it out as we went, really.
Awesome. Cool. And so what was the difference in care for you, I guess, like in New Zealand? So obviously you said you were with a midwifery group practice the first time. So what did you decide to do this time around?
So this time I had a recommendation of a midwife and I got her and I was really stoked that I got her. And she was great and it was such a different experience because I just had this one midwife and I would see her every, you know, whenever you had the appointments. And we decided I had to obviously give her all my birth notes from the first birth because it was in Sydney. So she and I had to talk to her about my first birth. And I think between us, we decided that, you know, as far as first births go, mine was okay. And I had a vaginal birth and, you know, so maybe we could try and give birth in a birthing clinic, not a hospital, because I was living quite far from the hospital as well. So in Wellington, we were living up the coast, up in Plymouthon area, and that's about a half an hour drive to the, or maybe even 35 minutes to the city hospital. And so she suggested I go to Porirua and birth at a Kenepuru hospital. And, well, it's Kenepuru birthing unit or something. And I remember mum and everybody going, oh no, I don't think you should do that. What if you need to have a, you know, an epidural, because they don't administer epidurals and they don't do C-sections or anything. So what if something goes wrong? So it was always, I was umming and ahhing about that, you know, what do I do? Do I just do what the midwife suggests I do? And so then we talked about it a lot and I realized that maybe I could just try and give birth there. And if at any point I feel like, you know, unsafe or I need to get to the hospital, we would go, you know, straight away via an ambulance. So, so we decided that we'd book in there. So that was quite funny because then it made me think, right, I'm going to have to try and do this without an epidural. And I know that I nearly did it last time in such a it was such a chaotic environment that maybe I could possibly do it this time, but I don't really care. You know, I didn't really have an agenda. I just wanted to get the baby out. I never cared about what happened. That pregnancy was fine, like no problem with the scans or anything. So that was a win. That was cool. And then at about 38, he was born 38 weeks. So he was early as well. So Rico was 3 weeks early and Louis, we had a couple of friends around at our house. And I just made a platter and I was sitting down and yarning and then it was time for them to go and it was around 5 o'clock, but I sort of said to them, I think you kind of have to go. I possibly could be in labor. And then it got to the point where I was like, I actually don't think I want to talk to you guys anymore. And so I think I said that out loud, like, sorry, I don't really think I want to talk. I think you guys have to go. And so I remember walking them out the door with Dan and sort of being a bit funny, and I didn't really want a bar of them. And which is quite unlike me because I'm a bit of a people person. But and then Dan was cooking a roast dinner, and it was 5 o'clock, and then at 5:30 I called Mum and I said, Mum, I think I might be in labor. I'm not sure, but I think I could be. And she said, okay, I'll come around. And you know when you do that call and you're thinking, oh, am I wasting people's time?
Yeah.
And so Dan sat down for dinner, and Rico was in the high chair. I remember this. And I just did not want the dinner. And that's when I kind of thought, maybe I am in labor, because I love food. And I was like, the smell was making me feel sick. And I was like, and then I was getting my shoes on, and I had brand new leather white Converse. And I remember doing them up, and there's a point to why I told you that. I'll tell you soon. And I remember Mum walking up the stairs and going, oh my goodness, get yourself to the hospital now. And I was like, what? Why? And I was like kind of leaning against the door frame. And she said, just hurry up, go. And I remember just like going in the car and Dan driving me, obviously. Oh, that's what I forgot to say to you. I was trying, because we were giving birth at this unit, I wanted to try and listen to birthing affirmations and hypnobirthing stuff.
Yeah.
So from about 30 weeks, I started listening to this affirmations every night before bed. And I was learning about the fact that my body was able to do this. It's all good pain. The calmer I am, the quicker my baby will come to me. And so I said in the car to Dan, like, what do you need to say to me? What do you need to say to me? And he would say, your body is made for this. That is just all he would say. He's a man of few words, but he just said the right things. All he just said to me was, relax. The more you relax, the baby will come quicker. And so I just kept trying to breathe and just going, relax, relax. And I remember just knowing, like thinking, surely I must be quite far along.
Yeah.
And then he took a wrong turn and he had to reverse. And oh, I was like dying. Yeah, I think I was just like, what are you doing? Because I don't know, something about the reverse motion, it was just so happy. Yeah. So anyway,
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
He reversed and finally parked, and I remember thinking, God, you know, jeepers, what's happening here? And then we walked in to the birthing room, but there was a man in the waiting room. Or you walk into the actual hospital and then you've got to go right to the birthing room. And I walked into the actual hospital and there was a man there in the waiting room. And I looked at him and we made eye contact. And then suddenly my waters broke. And I remember looking down my legs. Like I had trackies on or something. Tights weren't even in then. It was so dumb for me. I was pregnant too early in the day, in the years. But I remember the watery bloody mix was going on my brand new white Converse.
Oh no.
And I just remember being disaster about that, but also so mortified that this man was right there.
Yeah.
Anyway, I walked in. I remember Dan like helping me, you're here to help me walk at this point. And it was all dark in there and there was no one in there. And then behind us came the midwife and she put on all these lights and there was like no one in this birthing. It was so different to Sydney. Like in Sydney, they didn't have a bed. I chose any room in this new birthing unit
because
there was no one else there. And I remember her going, get up on the bed. I need to organize, you know, I need to get the room sorted. And she said, I'll do a quick internal. And so she quickly like did it. She got me on the bed and quickly looked at me and looked inside and did an internal, but she didn't even need to really look because she just goes to Dan, you're going to be delivering this baby. next contraction, you need to start to push. And Dan was just like, what? But he loves like Discovery Channel. So he was like all about it. He was just so like, okay, sweet. And so he looked at me going like, thank God. Like he couldn't believe it, his luck, yeah, that I was fully dilated. Like he just, and so then I pushed and he was born like three pushes later, Louis was born. And Dan had to deliver him because the midwife, there was like nothing ready and she needed to get everything sorted.
Yeah.
And I just remember looking at him and he was so elated that he didn't have to endure what he endured in Sydney.
Yeah.
And I remember, I arrived there at 5:59 and he was born at 6:09.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so I remember it was 11 minutes past six and he called my mum and mum answered and I could hear. And mum said, how far along is she? And Dan said, no, he's born. And it was just so euphoric.
Yeah.
It was just incredible. Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing. And how did you feel sort of like, you know, different birth experience, still like a good, you know, positive birth story, but far less chaotic in a different way, I guess. So how did you feel after this birth?
I honestly felt like just so amazing. Yeah. I felt like a superhuman. I just felt so stoked. And I just, it was just a birth that I kind of want to just relive that birth again, because the feeling was just, I mean, it was so full on for that short time, but it was, I kind of had control. I kind of knew I could do it. And I just, my mindset was so much more, you know, in control. And I remember saying, I'm a real bad, well, not bad, but I always say, I can't do it. And I do know, I'm not like, I mean, I've just been at my sister's two births and we're very different. Whereas she's very, very calm, whereas I'm just like, I can't. Yeah. But then I can, you know. I'm a bit of a roller coaster, but it was pretty cool because I realized I can. Yeah. Mm. Where there's lots of times where you think you can't.
Yeah.
Mm.
Awesome. Cool. And how long did you end up staying there before going home?
Again, I felt like I should stay there. I stayed there not long at all. I stayed there one night, but that he was born at 6:11 or 6:09 PM. And I stayed that night. And I remember the midwife taking him, he was really mucousy, and she took him from me for a couple of hours and let me sleep. And, you know, I was just not getting that kind of care in Sydney. So that was so lovely to have that, but I wanted to go home because I'm a homebody. So the next day I went home and then I regretted it because as soon as you go home, you're back being a mum to an 18-month-old. Like, I just don't know why I just didn't lap that up. But I just kind of wanted to get home and get my family unit going, you know?
Yeah. No, I can understand that. And so how did you go with introducing new baby to Rico? And what was that whole experience like, obviously having like a pretty young son and then a newborn? What was that like?
So I remember doing all that reading up and thinking, what do you do? And there were just a few things that, you know, how they say, like, give a present to Rico from the baby. I don't think I actually did that. I just remember always referring to Louis, so he was my second baby, as Rico's baby as well. And this is your baby. This is your baby. Like, I didn't want him to feel like he's been replaced.
Yeah.
So that's like good. This is good, like, stuff for you to take on too with your joy. Like, so, and mummy's hands are busy. Like, I would never say like, oh no, I've just got to be with Louis. I'll just be like, mummy's hands are busy.
Yeah.
I'll be with you in a minute, you know? And I just always, when I introduced Louis to Rico through the pregnancy, this is your baby too. You know, it's in my tummy, but it's your baby.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it was time for Rico to meet his baby and it went down well. Like, it was good. Yeah. I remember one occasion where he kind of lashed out at the baby once and I quickly made him aware that that was not tolerated. And then he learned from that. And it was a great thing for him because he really likes the company and he always Yeah, it was because he was so young. I had this thought that it was almost like really good for him because he didn't really know any much different, you know. Yeah, like yeah. he's been raised with Louis pretty much, and he didn't go to preschool or anything. Or he actually did go to preschool, but I started him quite late on. There was a spot that came available just before Louis was born, which in hindsight is not good timing really for him. He needed to have longer to settle. Yeah. And so he didn't really settle into that. So I just kept him at home with me and it was fine. And I mean, I look back and I think, God, it was so hard. But I wasn't a working mum, so I didn't really have to plug him into daycare or anything like that. So I had him and Louis with me a lot and it was great. And I think, yeah, I didn't really have... The only thing that I really remember is that Louis actually chilled me out. So yeah. Rico was quite hard work and Louis was really cruisy. And even though he did have really bad reflux, he was a really cruisy kid and baby, and to this day is really chilled and a very calm nature. So he was like a perfect mix for Rico. So yeah. He made me realise, oh, it doesn't matter if they don't sleep, you know, just chill. You know, he really... made me realize that I just needed to relax.
Yeah. Awesome. And what about your feeding journey this time around? Was it much different to your first?
Oh yes, like yeah. I fed all my babies, but every baby I found difficult to start. It always hurt, and I always saw, you know, how they say, oh, it shouldn't hurt. I mean, it always hurt, but I always fed. Yeah. And so it still took a while, and he was pretty really bad reflux. He spilt every feed and it would just stress me out. And but we there was a lot of stress, like with the feeding, you know. But I always did feed, and I feed all my babies till they were one. And after 6 weeks I remember thinking, oh yeah, I kind of got that down pat kind of a bit now. Yeah. And then by 3 months it doesn't hurt at all and it's easy as. So just it's like the whole journey, eh? Like, you know, your milk comes in and you think you've had the baby, and then your milk comes in and you're like, oh my God. And like, I always had so much milk. So I was always having to use flannels, and I'd have to express to start. Like I would get him to the letdown to come, and then I would take him off the boob and like stop the flow and get rid of lots of the flow because he couldn't, the reflux was so hard for him to manage. And so, it was always a rigmarole. I was never just your easy, like, nice feeder that had perfect amount of milk for the baby.
Yeah,
it's leaking, and the other boob would leak, and I'd have to have flannel in the other boob, and it was just a real pain for a lot, for each one, for a few months, really, until it settled down.
Yeah. And so, what sort of happened, I guess, from there with your little family? And I know that you said you always thought that you wanted to have four, but what was the next step in deciding, or did you decide that you wanted to have a third?
Yeah, it's just so weird. I just look back and think, what was I thinking really? Like, I don't know. Like, I'm from four. My husband's from four, but then his dad remarried and had two more. So he's like from six. And we just always thought we would have four. And so I don't even know why, because why, that's a lot of kids, and there's a lot of boys in my house right now, but you wouldn't know, they're watching a family movie. So so the third one, I think Dan and I had talked about that we would have four and it beforehand. So it was like never a case of like, are we just going to have two? Like we just always knew we'd try and have four. He wanted to have a big, you know, we don't even think it is that big really, it's only four, but people, it's not very common these days to have four.
No, it's not that common.
No. And so we decided to, this pregnancy was a little bit deceiving. He always reckoned that it was like an immaculate conception, but then like in the last few years he's like let me know that it kind of like he remembers that one time it wasn't.
Oh my god, this is the same story as me and Joe this time around. Like he swore that there was no way, and then now he's like, oh yeah, that one time.
Oh my gosh, same with him. And it's so funny because I remember like for years I thought it was an immaculate, because I always tell my friends don't do the withdrawal method because it, that's That's how we got. That's how we got pregnant. But then lately, it's like, oh, actually, there was one time. Yeah. So, I know it was like early on in the piece of us trying, like, but I don't even. Well, actually, no. To be honest, I remember going to the doctor for Louis's 15-month jabs, and I was pregnant. And yeah. I remember thinking, what? Like, we hadn't really officially properly started trying. So this was the immaculate conception, the little. little white lie. Yeah. So so that meant that we were going to have the third baby when my little Louis was going to be 22 months old. So I was going to have Rico was 3 years 4 months by the time Carlos was born. So and so I was pregnant with Lossie, and then we decided to move to Christchurch at about 34 weeks pregnant. Dan's a builder, and he broke his leg playing rugby, and we came down here to South Island for a bit of a trip because what else are you going to do when he's a builder and he couldn't work for 12 weeks? And I drove our car, and we had the two boys in the back, and we decided we'd come and move to Christchurch because he wanted to start his own business down here, and there was a lot of work down here at the time. And much to our family's horror, because we were leaving mum and dad and aunties and uncles.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we moved down, and I was 34 weeks pregnant, had to get a midwife, found one just through like a Facebook page. I put it out there and found a lovely midwife. And because she didn't know my journey, my birth, you know, she didn't know my body, I had to have the baby at Christchurch Women's Hospital. Right. Yeah. So I couldn't like do the birthing unit or a home birth or anything like that. Well, I think, yeah, she was quite old school, and she was an older lady, and she'd been a midwife for years and years and years. And so she wasn't really into kind of a home birth at all. That wasn't a problem. I didn't care. Again, I just wanted to have the baby out. So it wasn't a big deal.
Yeah.
So I booked into Christchurch Women's, and I got to 40 weeks, and I'm still pregnant, and I'm telling everybody, oh no, I go early because I had a 3 week early and a 2 week early. And I remember absolutely just struggling so hard with that because, honestly, you have a baby 3 weeks early and then the next one's 2 weeks. You just don't think you're going to get to full term.
Yeah.
And anyway, at about 40 weeks pregnant, 3 days, finally, he decided to come. And my parents had come down for the birth to help out because we didn't have any family down here. We did have one of my husband's uncles and aunties, but they were busy and stuff. So Mum and Dad stayed at the that we lived at the time. There was a little holiday park, and they had a cabin. It was so funny, just for a few weeks. And finally, it was getting to that point where they'd been there for a week because, you know, I was probably going to go a bit early, and so it was a bit stressful thinking that they wouldn't be there and they'd be gone, you know. But anyway, so went into labour in the middle of the night, as I feel like most of my births happened that way, except for Louis. Louis was born at, you know, a decent time. But in the middle of the night, I went into labour, and again, the Braxton Hicks really messed with me because I get so many Braxton Hicks for the second and third births that I would often think I was in labour.
Yeah.
And it would often be when we had sex, and it would make the Braxton Hicks come along, and oh, so bad, like, because that would happen, I'd do it again and we'd have sex again because I'd be like, oh, maybe this is gonna happen,
this is gonna make the baby come,
and it never did. I don't know, we tried so I got to the hospital, and it was all unfamiliar to me because we're in Christchurch. So again, you know, I'd only been in Christchurch for 6 weeks, and I didn't have any, I had one sort of friend that I'd made at a playgroup, and I didn't really know anybody. And we had these two little boys, and it was pretty weird going to a hospital you just don't know, and in a city you don't know. Everyone said to me before we left, why don't you stay here and have the baby and then go? But I was like, no, we quite like a challenge. And I remember getting into the hospital room and saying, I can't do this, I can't do this. And the lady going, you can do it. And I remember saying to her, how many babies have you had? And she said, none. And I just went like, oh, Great. Well, I don't want to listen to you, which is like so wrong because she's a professional. But I just I just felt like a bit deflated with that comment. I wanted her to say three or something, you know, because it was my third birth. And I remember Dan just saying to me again, you can do it. You know, your body's designed for this, you know, think of it as good pain. And I just do remember thinking like, you know, I remember feeling like I can't do it. I can't do it. Anyway, my waters broke and I was up on the on the bed and there was meconium.
Yeah.
So they called the alarm and all these doctors came in. And it was quite a lot of meconium, so there was quite a lot of stress in that point. And I was very far along now, though. I was sort of transitioning, but they were like, you just have to push no matter what. So I was having to push without a contraction.
Okay.
Because they needed to get him out as fast as I could. And anyway, he was born, and we didn't know the gender of this one. And I remember Dan. I remember not even thinking about it, though. When he was born, I was so relieved that he was born and he was healthy. And then Dan was like, oh, it's another boy. And I was like, oh, I didn't even know. Like, who cares? Yeah. And so he was born and he was the third in 3 years, really. And he was the most amazing, easiest baby I've ever had. And he, because he didn't have reflux and I just couldn't believe it. I was waiting every day for him to start vomiting and to start screaming, and he didn't. And he was so calm and he was so chilled and he slept like those babies you'd hear about. He just slept, and it was like he knew that he just needed to sleep because I had these two little boys that were running me ragged. And so that was by far the hardest transition, like 2 to 3, because I had, they were all so young. And I actually got asked this on my Instagram the other day, you know, what was harder, 2 to 3 or 3 to 4? And it was definitely 2 to 3 because even though he was such a cruisy baby, just that logistics was so hard for me because there was a 3-year-old, not even a 2-year-old in him, you know? So that was pretty full on. But I mean, it was so awesome because we did it and we did it together. And it was a really cool time for our family because it was just us and we made it work, and it was, I can't believe it that we did it, really.
Yeah, looking back on it now, right?
I know. I just look at my sister who's got the 2 under 2. Well, Nina's now 2, but I'm just like, oh, yeah, I know. You don't need to tell me.
Yeah. And so how did you go, I guess, like, was your feeding journey quite different this time around because no reflux, or, what was this one like?
Yeah, it's funny because he wasn't, the feeding journey was, again, I remember every time being, you know, oh, this is a bit difficult. This is a bit harder than I thought, you know. I can't wait to get to that point where it's just not hard or not a rigmarole. He was good, easy feeder, and the fact that there was no reflux, you know, I still had to navigate the whole, I had so much milk, and I never expressed or anything because I just couldn't find that balance. Because every time I would express, I'd just get so much milk. And none of them took bottles either. Like, I just couldn't work that out. I didn't have the support. I didn't know who to call on. And so I never really bothered with the bottle. So it was always just me feeding. And he was pretty, pretty good feeder, but he did, I didn't feed him. He kind of weaned himself at around about 10 months. And we stopped feeding at around then because he just was self-weaned. But I didn't worry about it. It was no problem. So not too bad.
Awesome. Cool. And so when or how far into your journey with 3, very close to under 3 boys, did you think maybe that number 4 might be on the cards?
I tried to like trick myself that I just have 3. And I'd be like, no, we're done. Because I just didn't want to get pregnant again as well. Like, I just find pregnancy a bit of a pain. And I know we're so lucky, but I was never your easy pregnant. Like, I used to swell and it was just, was not good. I'm a moaner as well. And I just used to pee. I mean, I haven't even told you about the fact that I would have like a bucket in my room to pee in because that is just so bad, eh? But we lived like some stairs in our house and the toilet was downstairs and I just couldn't keep going down the stairs.
It was
pretty bad. But so I think, okay, so obviously I've got 3 boys and you know, how they say, like, I remember my neighbour in Christchurch saying, oh, do you not know the recipe to make a girl? And I remember being like, oh, whatever. And then obviously you think, oh, okay, is there a recipe? And so I said to Dan, maybe we should just try once. We'll just try once in the time that they say is the recipe. So, you know, they say you should do it to get a girl. You do it before ovulation and then you just abstain. And so then the fast swimmers die off and the slow swimmers will get the sperm and that will be a girl. Have you heard that?
I have not heard that, but I have heard something similar. Yeah.
Yeah, it's real funny because all the other three boys, like, I never cared. Like, I never did that. But I thought, okay, well, it's the last one. Maybe I should just try and we'll just do that, because then at least I can say I tried. And obviously if I have another boy, then I'm just meant to be a mother of four boys. Yeah. And, you know, so I never did it. We never got pregnant just to have, like, try for a girl. It was like we wanted four kids. Anyway, so one day it was – this is really – not this is this was quite unusual for back then, being so knee deep in nappies. The kids were all napping and it was middle of the day and I said, right, we need to do it now. And I remember him going like, what now? And I was like, yep, come on, quick, only just now, like, it's the right time. I'm like day 10. And so we did it, and we didn't do it again. And then I was pregnant, and as soon as we found out I was pregnant, I just felt like complete, and I didn't even know what it was. I just knew this was the right thing. We're having one more and this will be our baby. And it was so funny because at the 12-week scan, I said to the woman, which I had just happened to be the manager of the facility, so she's quite, you know, far up it. She knew what she was doing when she was scanning. And I said to her, look, this is my fourth pregnancy. I've got three sons. Can you just, like, if you see anything, can you tell me? Because, you know, I need to put at rest, you know, if I'm not going to have a daughter.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, okay, yeah, I'll see what I can see. We don't normally see anything, though. And then as soon as she put the Doppler on my belly, she was like, oh, 99% sure that's another boy.
Oh, my gosh.
And Dan, like, grabbed my arm and he said, oh, you're right, babe. And I said, no, I'm fine. I love him. Like, I just was fine. I mean, there was definitely like, oh god, wow, how is there another boy, like, how? who is this boy? And like, I'm not gonna have a daughter, and is that gonna be okay? And like, the comments that I would get were so hurtful, and it was just, I think that the comments that I got were the hurtful comments, and that would confuse my brain that should I not be happy about this or something, you know? But deep down in me, I did feel like I was lucky. Like, I thought, wow, I'm gonna be the only queen in this house, like, that's you know, and so anyway, 20-week scan came, and I really wanted to give birth at there's a really cool place down here called St. George's, and apparently they do, like, well, I know they do because my sister got to give birth there, but it's a birthing unit as well, and they do really yummy iced chocolates, and they do real good food, and they do hot chocolates, and they do it with cream, and they treat you real nicely, and it's a really nice experience. So I was really wanting to give birth there, but at the 20-week scan, I got told that I had there was something foreign in my body, and it was reacting funny to my blood and everything. And that foreign thing was actually my baby. And I had a thing called anti-E. So it wasn't anti-D, it was anti-E. And I had to have a blood test and a scan every week from 20 weeks.
Oh, wow.
And it was such a pain because I had the three other little kids, and it was really not the one, because it was stressful, and they said that this is good, that it's your last pregnancy, you probably shouldn't have another baby. And that kind of annoyed me because I fancied being a surrogate and stuff. So the blood tests and stuff were just to check my levels every week to make sure it was fine, and there was a big chance that I'd have to have the baby early, and I would have him he would the baby would have to have a blood transfusion at birth.
Right. So what is anti-E? Like, how can you explain it to someone who's not heard of it?
Not really, because I tried to, like, find out all the stuff, and even the midwife was like, it's really hard to explain it to you. There isn't much info out there. And I actually looked it up before to try and re-see if there's now more information. And there's, like, nothing. It's just like his blood type and my blood type were not matching. And they weren't. There was a chance that the transfusion thing, I couldn't really ever come to terms with understanding it. And that sounds a bit thick, but I just, but I didn't need to kind of worry too much because the levels kept staying the same and it was fine. And I was checked so much that it just made me think, okay, it's going to be fine.
Yeah.
Anyway. And so I was 39 weeks, maybe 2 days before my due date, and my waters broke at home. It's so weird how, you know, your waters break at all different times.
Yeah.
Like first birth waters broke, and then 2 days later he was born. Second birth they broke as I walked in and I was about to give birth, you know, and then the third.
Yeah.
So the waters broke kind of at the start for the fourth birth. And I didn't have family down in Christchurch. So I had a friend, that first friend I spoke about that I met, and my first sort of friend in Christchurch, she was going to come and look after my kids when I was in labour, because I didn't know when. I didn't want mum and dad to have to hang around again. I didn't know what was going to happen. So she actually lived quite far away from me, though, about 25 minutes, my friend. And I rang her and I said, I'm in labour. And, you know, I go quite quickly. So come around. And I remember ringing my midwife and her saying, oh, no, you should just stay. It wasn't the same midwife because the midwife had retired. So it was a new midwife. And the midwife said, oh, no, you just stay at home. Yeah. And I was so sure, I was so far along that I was like, I'm not staying at home. And she wasn't very happy with that. And I remember just saying to Dan, I just want to go to the hospital. Can we just go to the hospital? Especially because I was getting my friend round too. I didn't want to just like, I just needed to get out.
Yeah.
And I remember driving in and Dan driving me in. And I remember thinking like, oh, you know, I reckon I'm about 6 centimetres or something.
Yeah.
And so then we get to the hospital and the midwife knows that we've gone there, but she's not very happy. And I see this other midwife and she does an internal. Oh, no, she doesn't do an internal. She just gets me into a room and she said, your midwife will be here soon. And the midwife came and she did an internal and she said, you're not even in labour. And I remember being like, what? And she was like, you're only about like 2 or 3 centimetres dilated. And I just, but it was, he was posterior.
Okay.
And I just remember thinking, like, are you actually kidding me? This is my fourth birth. And I felt like a fool because I felt like it was annoying because she was annoyed that I was there.
Yeah.
And, but I felt like I was so adamant. I was, you know, like 7 centimetres or something.
Yeah.
And I just wasn't. And it was so hard for my brain to believe that because I'd done it before and I'd had, so it was a different kind of pain, this one, because he was back to back. And anyway, cut a long story short, I just hung out in the shower for ages. And Dan, I was pissed off and I would say to Dan, like, this is so unfair. Like, why is this happening to me? It's like my last time I'm doing this. Can it not just be straightforward?
Yeah.
And it just makes you realize now, way that like, it's just, things are just not in your control and you just have to let it go. And it's like life sometimes, And so then, anyway, I finally got to the point where I was able to, you know, be fully, I was in transition and she said, you're ready to go. And so I did it. I gave birth to him and it was like the best ever because I had this healthy baby that didn't need a blood transfusion and he was so cute, like his brothers, and he looked, and I couldn't believe that I had four cute boys, and I was just stoked. And I was in the shower about half an hour after the birth. I remember the midwife going to me, you were incredible. And I remember thinking, why did you not tell me that at the start? Like, you just made me feel not incredible, but it was great to hear those words. And then I went in the shower and then the Kaikoura earthquake happened.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, no.
And we were on level 5 of the Christchurch Hospital.
Yeah.
And it was intense and it was so scary. And I was like, oh my gosh. And I was in the shower. Dan had the baby. His name's Tay. So Taina means youngest in Māori. And Dan came to me with this tiny, tiny half an hour baby, you know, old baby. And I was like, Dan said, get to the ground. And so we went under the door frame in the shower kind of thing, bathroom. And it was so scary. Oh, and then the worst thing was, it lasted quite a long time, the shake of the building. So the building's on rollers, so it is designed for earthquakes. So what happens, though, in an earthquake, it shakes a lot, it rolls, and it rolls more than your typical building. So it was pretty intense. And But we live by the beach and we were getting evacuated. So Dan had to leave within, like, right then. So my friend Jen had to go back to her family, and Dan had to get all my boys out of the house. This is like 1:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
And he has to go to higher ground. So he just, like, I've got this new baby in the hospital. We're having aftershocks, like, left, right and center. He's on driven up the bank with the boys. Yeah. And it was just like the worst. So, like, my fourth birth ending just didn't happen.
God.
Yeah. And so, like, that was, and then the next morning there was still aftershocks, and they quickly checked him to make sure he didn't need another blood, you know, a blood transfusion then. Yeah. And I just got admitted straight away and went straight home to the circus that is now my family. Yeah. So I never got the time wished upon, but yeah, there's been, yeah. And sometimes I'm like, should we do it again just to get that time? But no way.
Yeah. Yeah. And how did the boys react to having, you know, their final baby brother at home?
Like, so amazingly. Yeah. They just, he was like, it's so weird. Like, he is like the missing little piece to the puzzle in a way. Yeah. Like, he's the baby, but he is just the kindest, most loving brother. And so, which means they all, like, love him. And, like, it was so much easier this time because Rico was, he was 5 at the time, but nearly 6. And Louis was a really, I worked really hard with getting them to be kind of role models. And, like, they looked after the third one a lot. They used to I remember they'd put toothpaste on his brush and help me out. I always made this point of including them in their baby coming. This is their baby, you know, as I said earlier, of the first, the second. And I always made sure that the toddler was able to walk with me around the block. That's something I was going to tell you, like, with Jai, go for little walks with him without the buggy, you know, like, make him hold your hand and to teach him that he's got to stay close by to you all the time. And just little things like that. I look back now and I think, oh my God, I can't believe I did it like that. Yeah. Like, so many in such a quick succession. But I always got such a thrill taking them all out, like, to the library or to the museum and having them all and obviously there were lots of times where it went pear shaped and it was horrendous and I'd cry. Yeah. But, you know, there were so many times where I felt like I'm so lucky to be able to do this. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, amazing. And how did you find, I guess, your recovery this time around? Like, did you find it any different to your third or, you know, your earlier pregnancies and births? Or what was that like?
I remember each pregnancy, I would feel like the pressure more in my vagina, like going to the toilet was always, the fourth pregnancy was just like, oh my God, I felt like I was going to fall out. But I never had a prolapse or anything like that. And I recovered after the fourth birth. I remember the physio coming in, and this is just so crazy because, I mean, I've got this business called Movement Mama, and you need to be cleared for exercise before you start exercise. And, you know, it's so something that should be part of our 6-week check. Yes. It's just so bad that like it's not, but it just so happens that a physio checked me on, like, the day after I had the fourth baby and checked my stomach muscles and couldn't believe how good they were. And, you know, I didn't have any diastasis or anything like that. And I remember thinking, wow, this is so cool, I got this check. But that does not happen very often. And I don't know why I got it. But I have been really lucky with my recovery. My vagina, like, I've always the fourth one was probably like, I was quite fit beforehand. I think I had been sort of exercising a lot in the fourth pregnancy, and I think that really did help with my recovery. I just think it's so bad that there's just not that you've got to pay so much money to get like $200-something to get your insides checked that they haven't, you know, that it's okay, that they're okay. Mm. But no, I've been really lucky in my body. So far, so good.
Awesome. Cool. And is there anything else that you want to share in terms of any of your stories or anything that we haven't covered?
No, not really. I do think that a lot of the time people looking in would be like, oh, she must be a really good mum. She's got four kids, or she must love it. And I just want to say that there's so much of it I find so hard. And yes, I love children, but gosh, sometimes I think, you know, whoa. And I get overwhelmed and I get stressed and I think, you know, it's really a hard job. So, you know, I don't know. I just think you can never tell what's going on behind closed doors, you know. Yeah, social media can make things look a bit warped sometimes. So, yeah, as long as I think we need to be a bit more transparent about that. Like, we did plan to have these four babies and we feel really lucky and stoked that we've got this big family. But by no means is it easy, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think that's a really valid and good point. Thank you. And thank you so much, Lisa, for coming on the podcast and sharing your stories with us. I've loved hearing about your four different births and yeah, for quite different experiences. So thank you very much for being willing to come on and chat with me.
You're welcome.
Thanks so much for tuning into this week's episode of Kiwi Birth Tales. I hope you have enjoyed it. I look forward to bringing you another awesome episode next week. So keep an eye out.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.